I'd like to begin the series, Brighton, that we would probably carry through the spring into the early summer, about being people of character. Say character. And I said the tagline, victory in the virtues. And we're going to study these different character traits that we can apply to our lives. And I would challenge you through the series. Would you say with me, Lord, whatever you want to do in my life, help me to surrender in a greater dimension so that I can be more like you, more like your person, Lord. So I want to start today. Here's how we'll roll to begin the series. Probably the first 40% of the message this morning is going to be a baseline for us to apply. And then we're going to the second half, last 50 to 60% is going to be about a subject that really is hand in glove with character, and that's integrity. Applying a spirit of integrity within our hearts and our lives. I would submit to you, Brighton, we have Americans as a nation, we have character that really courses through our veins, or at least we used to. At the dawn of our republic, our founders believed that individual character was critical for the formation of our fledgling nation. And all the communities scattered from the mountains to the shining sea, if you will. They believed, that our founding fathers believed, that instilling character in society, it carved a pathway to justice, order, and the common good. And the only alternative to that would be utter ruin. Think about it. You can't hardly travel in America without being confronted by the historical importance of character. You say, what do you mean, Pastor? I mean this. Whether you're traveling through the Rocky Mountains to the west or down to the sandy coastline into the Carolinas and into Florida, you'll soon encounter a name that has always been synonymous with character. That name, as you know it, is Washington, as in George Washington. Washington was surrounded by men far more brilliant, educated, and in many ways capable than he was. If you think about the pantheon of political characters that surrounded him, it's overwhelming. They were literally rock stars in that day and age, to term, use a term in our day. Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Patrick Henry, John Adams, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison. But at three different times in the early history of our country, the future of our nation hung in the balance. And at those three critical junctures, these brilliant men and their comrades unanimously chose George Washington to be the commander-in-chief of the Continental Army, the president of the Constitutional Convention, and then the only unanimously elected president of the United States. Why? From the numerous studies that you can do on George Washington's life, if you study the books, the monoliths, the monographs, if you will, written about him, the most commonly cited characteristic given for the emergence of this supreme leader of the father of our nation is character. Talk about a lasting legacy. A survey of the Census Bureau found that George Washington has the most places named after him, from the United States Capitol to the state of Washington, that it includes 241 townships, 26 cities, various boroughs and villages, 15 mountains, and you will hear and see the name synonymous with character, Washington. When you Google Washington Street, I know it'll have a lot of addresses, but do you know you'll get 15 million hits? In a society, authority placed in the hand of people in our culture is placed to these leaders rather than a sovereign monarch. Our founders knew if citizens neglected character, the entire republic would be at risk. Thomas Jefferson, look what he wrote in 1801. The steady character of our countrymen is a rock to which we must safely moor. He might not recognize the name, but you would recognize the quotes. He was a French philosopher and historian, and Alexis de Tocqueville came to America to study the nature of our nation. He's reported, it's a little different quote, but the paraphrase is this. America is great because she is good, and if she no longer becomes good, she will no longer be great. But de Tocqueville traveled around America and was struck by the centrality, the common fact, of the moral virtue of the American spirit and its necessity for the survival of our republic. Look what he said. How could society escape destruction if, when political ties are relaxed, moral ties are not tightened? What does character mean? The word comes from a Greek word to mean the marks or the imprints of a coin or a seal. I'd like to use this definition through the series if we can. Character is the composite of good moral qualities, typical of moral excellence and firmness, blended with resolution, self-discipline, high ethics, force, and judgment, from Webster's Third International Dictionary. In other words, character is the impression your life leaves on others. A lot of people confuse character, say character, say reputation. A lot of people confuse the two, but they're not twins, they're cousins, if you will. Reputation is what other people think you are. Character is who God knows you are. Abraham Lincoln said, character is like a tree and reputation is like its shadow. The shadow is what we think of it. The tree is the real thing. Somebody said, many a man's reputation would not know his character if they met it on the street. At the beginning of, think about this. This is profound in my opinion. At the beginning of the 19th century, most obituaries made at least some mention of the character of the person that died. By the end of the century, the end of the 1800s, the 19th century, the practice had basically disappeared. On the other hand, at the beginning of the 20th century, obituaries seldom mentioned a person's occupation. But by 1990, occupation had become the single greatest way in which a deceased person was identified. The way they viewed people had completely changed in our culture. What we do has become more important than who we are. We no longer value values, at least not like we once did. You see a picture of an author on the screen by the name of David Brooks. In New York Times, columnist is what his role is full time. But he wrote a book, The Road to Character. And he makes the distinction. I love the terminology. He makes the distinction between resume virtues versus eulogy virtues. Resume virtues are the skills you need to make a living. Eulogy virtues are the qualities you need to make a life. Resume virtues give you a temporary job. Eulogy virtues will get you eternal respect. In reversal from the time of George Washington, American society now places more value on the former than the latter. Look what Brooks writes. We all know that eulogy virtues are more important than resume ones, but our culture and our educational systems spend more time teaching the skills and the strategies you need for career success than qualities you need to radiate that sort of inner light. Many of us are clearer on how to build an external career than how to build inner character. Low character at a high cost. J.P. Morgan was one of the greatest bankers and financiers in American history. He helped to organize General Electric and U.S. Steel. And his bank became the predecessor to the largest bank in America, J.P. Morgan Chase. But he was once asked what he considered to be the best bank collateral. Without hesitation, he replied, character. So we're going to learn in this series that we're all constructing our lives. You say, well, man, I'm 80 or 90, Pastor. Can I tell you? You're still constructing your life. If you've got a pulse, you've got a purpose for God. And so you're constructing your life by choices that you're going to make. And the reason I'm asking you to pray with us as we close each week is because you're building that good character brick by brick, thought by thought, action by action, habit by habit. And through the daily exercising of courage and determination and self-examination, you're building a character. The decisions we make will affect others. But they'll also shape the place we've got to live alongside of each other. When we shortcut character, I would submit to you, we shortcut ourselves. So I want you to, that was the first 40%. Are you still with me? Say amen. So I want you to look at the first character trait that all of us need to apply. And oh, how we need it in our culture. And it's the first of the virtues. Victory in the virtues is this idea of integrity in our lives. And I put the statement, don't leave home without it. Integrity is a word that has a deep and a broad meaning, but it makes it sometimes hard to define in a single sentence. Great author, C.S. Lewis, he said, integrity is doing what is right when no one's looking. I might add the line there, when no one's looking except for God. Someone said, integrity is doing what you say you will do unless it is wrong. I'm going to use this definition for integrity. Integrity is always doing the right thing, jot it down, the right thing, say right thing. At the right time, say right time. In the right place, say right place. Regardless of the cost or the consequence. This week, sometime this afternoon, I'll turn it on, I'm sure, see if Scotty Scheffler can beat out one of the other golfers. He's leading by one stroke in the Masters. Their tagline is, a tradition like none other. But you see another golfer, probably the greatest one of all time, even greater than Jack Nicklaus, arguably. His name was Bobby Jones. And Bobby Jones, he had won 13 majors before he retired at age 28. He was the first player to win 4 major tournaments in 1 year. And there's a true story about Bobby Jones that reveals, I would submit to you, not his golf expertise, but his integrity. Bobby Jones took a one-stroke penalty at the 1925 U.S. Open. He inadvertently touched his ball and then assessed himself a one-stroke penalty, even though nobody else saw himself or him touch the ball. The tournament official didn't see it. His playing partner didn't see it. No one in the gallery saw it. They even tried to talk him out of assessing himself the penalty, and he would be justified in not taking it. But Bobby Jones would not violate his conscience and compromise his integrity. He assessed himself the penalty and ultimately lost the U.S. Open by that one stroke. When a tournament official tried to compliment him for his integrity, he said, "You might as well praise me for not breaking into banks. There's only one way to play this game." You want to talk about integrity. Jones could have won his 14th major, but he would have lost his integrity. To Bobby Jones, no win of any kind or size would ever compensate for the loss of one's integrity. Webster's Dictionary defines integrity as whole or complete. And it's taken from that root word of integer, meaning whole or complete. In mathematics, an integer is any number that's not a fraction or used as a decimal. You can't have partial integrity. Stephen Covey, the great author, said, integrity includes but goes beyond honesty. And that'll be one of the virtues we look at in this series, by the way, as well. Honesty is telling the truth. In other words, conforming our words to reality. Integrity is conforming reality to our words. In other words, keeping promises and fulfilling expectations. This requires an integrated character of oneness, primarily with self, but also with life. I would submit to you, you said, well, that's a lot of history today, Pastor. Where's the Bible? We're going to talk about the Bible now. It's a great, great proof text. Because one of the greatest pictures of integrity in history is the Old Testament account of Daniel. Anyone familiar? You can stop the people on US 23. And they might not have attended church for decades. But I would submit to you, most of them would know of the story about Daniel in the lion's den. But what is most important that people can gloss over, it's not that Daniel was thrown into the lion's den. It was what happened before Daniel was thrown into the lion's den and why he was thrown into the lion's den. In Daniel, we see why integrity is so important and how to make it part of our personal DNA. I want to give you three ideas. First off, this: live a life of integrity. Verses 1 and 2 of Daniel chapter 6, the story of Daniel being thrown into the lion's den. It says, it pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Let me give you the history real quick in 10 seconds or less. You know, Judah was taken captive by the Babylonians. And the Babylonians held those Jewish people for a season while they were in captivity. They were overtaken, the Babylonians were, by the Medes and the Persians. This is the third king that Daniel is going to serve under. Served under Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar from the Babylonian kingdom. Now, somewhere along the line in history, the Persians, the Medes, come in and take over the Babylonians. And now Daniel is serving under another foreign king. And as the Babylonian Empire is captured, the Persians break up the Babylonian Empire into 120 sections, 120 satraps. And the king of the empire that we see there, Darius, he's a pagan. And we see that he suspects that some people are skimming off the top, or they're embezzling money and being unfaithful employees. And the empire is so vast that he's got to surround himself with the best of the best. He knew he needed to surround himself with people that are accountable and honest. And he knew that the better people that you surround yourself with, you know what, the better a leader you're going to be. So he sought out the best people to help oversee the kingdom's affairs. And one choice was obvious. Look what it says in verse 3. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Say whole kingdom. Now get this, right? Daniel is about 85 years old. He's been serving in the land of Babylon and now Persia for 70 years. He's now under his third king. There's going to be a fourth that he serves under down the road, Cyrus. And this king is the new kid on the block. So likely Darius has never met Daniel. Though everybody knew about Daniel's reputation and his character. If you read the book of Daniel, you know that Daniel's character preceded him wherever he went. For seven decades, Daniel proved himself as a man of impeccable integrity. Daniel was put in charge of everyone else and was made second in command only to the king, Darius. Integrity, I would submit to you. Hear me, young people. Integrity is the cream that'll rise to the top. If you'll be an integrous leader, you don't even have to have the greatest smarts. God will raise you up because cream rises to the top. Integrity does that. Integrity, jot this down in your notes. I almost put it down, but just for room sake. Integrity trumps ability every time. Integrity trumps ability each and every time. There's no limit to how far anyone can go if others know that that individual can always be trusted to do the right thing. Daniel was not promoted, I would submit to you, because of his temporal lobe is one of the four lobes of the cortex of the brain. Not because of his temporal seniority, but because of his moral superiority. His character was a cut above everybody else's. And his integrity, look up here a second, because this is what you got to understand too. His integrity got him in trouble too. Look what the word says. At this, verse 4, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs. But they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. You want to talk about an amazing leader? And evidently, the good old boy network had been skimming off the top. And they didn't want Daniel messing up their gig. And so they knew that Daniel was an outsider, a foreigner, and an immigrant, a Jew. And so they couldn't stand the thought of him being over them. So what did they do? They launched a full-scale investigation into his life. They put a tail on him. They hired private investigators. They analyzed his tax records, his bank statements. They interviewed people he went to high school and college with. What did they find? Nada, zip, nothing of corruption. They brought in the FBI, the CIA, the IRS, ordered them to turn over every rock, look under every bed, open every drawer, every closet. They couldn't lay a glove on this guy. They thought surely 70 years of working in the government, something would cut Daniel down to size. But after putting him under the microscope, all they saw was an honest, hardworking, holy man. How did this exhaustive investigation end? Look at verse 5. Finally, these men said, "We'll never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." What a testimony about someone that you'll never find anything legally, morally, ethically wrong with them, and that your only hope is to help them, make them disobey their God. Can I say this? When you live with integrity, Your life becomes surrounded with a force field of righteousness and goodness that can withstand investigation and accusation. It's not in your notes, but just jot down the reference. I put it in my notes this morning. Proverbs 11:3. The integrity of the upright guides them, but the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity. Flip back one chapter, Proverbs chapter 10, verse 9. The man of integrity walks securely, but he who takes crooked paths will be found out. Isn't that powerful? Wow. So you and I, live a life. Say, live a life. Secondly, count the cost of integrity. Do you know the story of Daniel? This wasn't the first challenge to his integrity. But this would prove to be the potential question that'll cost them the most. Look at the next three verses. So these administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, "May King Darius live forever. The royal administrator, prefects, satraps, advisors, governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty, issue the decree, put it in writing so that it cannot be altered. In accordance with the law, of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be replaced. Stop right there. The Medes and the Persians, anytime there was a law that was put on the books, there was no changing. You couldn't change it at all. So the king, Darius, when he says this, okay, according to the Medes and the Persians, it's locked in. Are you with me? Give these guys, these snakes, credit for the brilliant idea, quite honestly. They just checkmated Daniel. Because the fact of the matter is, they couldn't find anything immoral, unethical about Daniel. So they decided to make his faith illegal. Daniel didn't hide that he prayed three times a day. And that he prayed to the only God who he believed exists. They passed this law with only Daniel in mind. Because they knew that if they made prayer to Daniel's God illegal, he was going to have a gold-plated reservation right to the lion's den. How could they be so sure it would work? How did they know that what Daniel would do? Because they knew Daniel for seven decades. When it came to integrity, Daniel's report card is straight A pluses, 100%. He is on it every day. They knew Daniel wouldn't fold, that the fact is that he would rather die first than make a contrary decision to what he knew his character and his integrity told him to hold to. Former president of Notre Dame University, Father Theodore Hesburgh, he said, my basic principle is don't make decisions because they're easy. You don't make them because they are cheap. You don't make them because they are popular. You make them because they're right. Though the king thought Daniel had been involved in the decision. Remember what those guys said? Look at verses 6 through 8. Verse 7, they said, hey, we've checked with all these guys, but they hadn't checked with Daniel. They were lying to the king. These men had lied. Daniel knew nothing about it. Because we read what? In verse 10, look at it. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, contrary to verse 7, the rubber hits the road for Daniel's life and Daniel's faith. He had offered a lifetime of honesty, decency, godly integrity in government service. He had served faithfully and loyally under every king, the previous two and then now Darius. And all he's done was his very best for others. What did he get for it? Gold watch? Stock options? Lifelong pension? Severance package? Golden parachute? Now he's facing the loss of his position. His security. His income. His friends. Even his own life. And I'll say it again. You and I are free to exercise integrity, but exercising integrity along the way is going to be costly. You exercise integrity not so you can get what you want or go where you want to go, but to be who you ought to be. I'll repeat that again. Not so you can get what you want, not so you can go where you want to go. You exercise integrity because you're God's child. And you live according to a different set of standards. And you apply the word of God to your life so you can be who God wants you to be. Amen. Daniel was going to do whatever he did next with eyes wide open. Knowing full well the cost he was going to incur. He came through just like his enemies thought he would. You talk about integrity. Look at Daniel chapter 6 verse 10. When Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Don't you love that phrase? Just as he had done before. No situational ethics with this guy. You know what? I am who I am who I am. Nobody ordered Daniel to pray. The fact is, he did it because he loved the Lord. And nobody was going to order Daniel not to pray because he was a man of God. You know, Daniel had options, right? Can I ask, what would you have done? What would I have done? Daniel did have options. He could have played it safe. He could have just taken a sabbatical from praying for 30 days. He could have played it safe and shut the windows and prayed in secret. He could have decided to, you know what, I'll just pray in bed when I lay down and pray silently. But integrity never goes on vacation. Integrity never takes a break. Integrity never calls a timeout. Integrity never takes a pass. Integrity doesn't go with the flow. It doesn't go along to get along. Integrity doesn't follow the crowd. Integrity stands its ground. Integrity doesn't listen to polls or feel what is the thought processes of the masses. Integrity lives by principles. Integrity may leave you all alone because you're the only one charged, as it was the case with Daniel. Put it in my notes like this. Whenever you're told to stand down and you stand up instead, you certainly will stand out and you may stand alone. And then you become a target. Talk is cheap. Integrity never just talks. It talks the talk and walks the walk. It never veers off course, never takes a shortcut, never cuts corners. It stands tall, it stands tough, it stands true to what is right. Say it with me. Live a life. Say, count the cost. Thirdly, pay the price of integrity. The traitors turn tattletales. They run to the king. They box him in a corner. Look at the next four verses. When they said to the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you're put in writing, he still prays three times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. He's trying to back out. He's trying to save this guy with integrity by not enforcing the integrity of the law of the Persians and the Medes. But look what the word says. Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. So the king gave the order. They brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. Pretty high price, isn't it? For integrity. It's not going to be quick, like a lethal injection or a beheading or a firing squad. A lion's death is not a pretty sight. Think about it. A lion's roar, it can be heard for up to 5 miles away. A hungry lion can eat 30% of his body weight in one sitting. Give or take a few pounds, I'm 200 pounds. That'd be like me going up to McDonald's after the service, and I'll be a little bit hungry, but it'd be like me going up to McDonald's and eating 200 quarter pounders. No man is a match for a lion, because an average lion possesses the strength of 14 men. You have to feel for Daniel. After decades of faithfulness and godliness, you'd have to assume this 85-year-old man wouldn't be going out this way. But that's the price you pay for integrity. Because you never outgrow integrity, and you can never get too old to do what's right. Daniel pays the ultimate price. You say, well, Pastor, we know how it ends. But imagine you didn't know how it ended. Here he is, he's thrown to the lion's den to face this horrific death. And the fact is, after all, who gets thrown into the lion's den and comes out alive? The only way, Brighton, hear me, as the worship team comes back. The only way you'll ever maintain your integrity is you make the same decision on a daily basis that Daniel did. Regardless of how the story ends for you. Some of those believers in the New Testament, James gets run through with a sword. Peter gets delivered until he gets crucified. But the fact of the matter is, many of them didn't get delivered like Daniel did. I would submit to you, got to get up every day and get out of bed and go to school or work and realize every day God is sending you out to lead others to know Christ, and so that they can get closer to Jesus, that you and I would live lives of integrity. Otherwise, if we don't live a life of integrity, we lead people away from the Lord our God. Don't ask yourself, do I do things right? Ask yourself, did I do the right thing? Let me try and summarize for you if you can. Jot these in real quick. Would you do that? Decide, say decide. Make the decision to be all in on integrity every day in every way. Determine, second D, say determine. Determine that our integrity is not for sale. It's just not for sale. There's no debating. Third D, say dedicate. Dedicate ourselves to maintaining our integrity regardless of the cost. Would you stand with me, Brian? Darren Morrell. I hadn't planned on doing this. Go to my office, and it's plugged into the computer, but just pull my phone off of that and bring my phone up, would you please? I want to read a story for you if I can, and then we'll close the service. As you can hear in my voice, I'm passionate about this subject for all of our lives, for us. You know what? Can I just say parenthetically? You know what? My dad, he was a great minister in the Assemblies of God, still a great minister in the Assemblies of God. But my dad never golfed. He never played tennis. Came to all our events. He put a basketball hoop in our driveway at age 8, and it proved to be, you know, an instrument to help me, you know, hone my basketball skills. But my dad would decompress and use car lots and buying used cars. Thanks, Darren. Appreciate it. Thank you. And it's still, my dad's 88. He called me this past week and he said, you know what, Brad, you ought to see the Corvette I just bought. 88 years old. He couldn't drive it home, but he had my brother drive it home, but it's in his garage and I'm going to try and buy it from him. I got to tell you. But I couldn't count on, it would take more than two hands to count how many times when my dad went to purchase a vehicle from a private party, the people, when he went to buy it and they were signing off on the title, didn't say, you know what, sir, what price would you like me to put in for the price that you paid? Because they understood the smaller the price, the less tax you'd have to pay as you registered it. Every time, my dad, when he would tell the person, you know what, sir, ma'am, you can just put the price exactly what I paid. Can you imagine, as a kid, if I had heard him preach all those sermons over the course of time, but I heard him say, you know what, something differently than that, how the duplicity of it all would appear to that boy, me. Story I want to share with you, and then we'll pray. And can I ask you to do me a favor? I believe God's ordained this series. If it's something that resonates in your heart, would you just share it on Facebook? You never know what young person, what adult, how it might minister to somebody and say, you know what? My life doesn't really align. I want to be a person of integrity. That's my one request beyond you applying the word to your life today. You see a picture on the screen of John Huntsman Sr. on the left. Many of you know his son who became the governor for the state of Utah, John Huntsman Jr., and then an ambassador to Russia and China, Mr. Huntsman's son would become. But dad on the screen was a major businessman and philanthropist. And he founded the Huntsman Corp. And he was, and back in 1986, he was negotiating a business deal after these lengthy negotiations with a man by the name that you see on the right. His name's Emerson Campin. And Emerson Campin was the chairman and the CEO of Great Lakes Chemical Corp. And they agreed that Campin would purchase 40% of the division of Huntsman's company for $54 million back in 86. That was a lot of money. Still a lot of money today, right? But they reached across the table and they shook hands, setting the deal. And Huntsman, the owner that's selling, the man on the left, he didn't hear from Campin for several months. About 4 months after their agreement, the Great Lakes lawyers called to say they would draft some documents. Many times in those business situations, the business procrastinates because they can hold on to their money. They can float their own money for a season. It took another 3 months for the purchase agreement to be put on paper. So it's almost been 7 months since they had the handshake. And within that time period, the price of raw materials had decreased substantially, and Huntsman's profits, the man that's selling, his profits had more than tripled. But no agreement had been signed by Great Lakes, and no documents had been exchanged. And so Campin, the buyer, he calls Huntsman with this remarkable proposal, and he says, quote, "According to my bankers, 40% of Huntsman Chemical today is worth $250 million. You and I shook hands and agreed on a $54 million price almost 7 months ago. I don't think I should have to pay the full difference, but I do think it's fair if I pay at least half." To Campin's shock, Huntsman refused the offer. He said, "It would not be fair to use the appreciated value, nor should I have to split the difference." He said, "You and I shook hands and made an agreement at $54 million. And that's exactly the price for which the attorneys will draft the documents." Campin said, "That's not fair to you." Huntsman said, "Emerson, you negotiate for your company and let me negotiate for mine." For John Huntsman, integrity was the trump card for his life. But the story doesn't end there. Emerson Campin never forgot that handshake. He took it with him to his grave. When Campin died, he had two principal speakers at his funeral. Governor Evan Bayh of Indiana, who would end up being a U.S. senator as well, and the other one was John Huntsman. Though Huntsman and Campin really were never close friends, Huntsman suspected why he had been asked to speak at Campin's funeral. He said, "Even though I could have forced Great Lakes to pay an extra $200 million for that 40% ownership stake in my company, I never had to wrestle with my conscience or to look over my shoulder. My word was my bond." Campin never forgot it either. Can I ask you? Will others forget aspects of your life? Sure they will. But let's ask the Spirit of God, should he tarry, that we would live out eulogy virtues versus resume virtues. That we would be people that are whole and complete because we represent the King. Now, where it ends, and again, give me 60 more seconds. What's amazing is this. King Darius comes to the edge of the cave, the den. He hollers down, "Did your God keep you?" Daniel looks up, "Yeah, he did. Yeah, I'm here. My God protected me. Close the mouth of those lions." You want to talk about a story. says, gather those guys, those snakes, throw them in there. They and their families didn't even hit the bottom of the den when they were overcome by the lions. And Darius says, makes an edict. You want to talk about edicts of the Medes and the Persians? We're all going to worship this God of Daniel. You never know the influence that your integrity will have upon those that are unbelievers. Just live the life with the Spirit's anointing. I promise you, there will be eternal dividends. You'll influence people greatly for the glory of God. You might not think it's making a difference. I want you to know it's making a difference for His glory. With every head bowed, those watching online, you could be in the middle of this next week, next month, I don't know. But you're watching it live, maybe. If you've never surrendered your life to Jesus, go right now to brightonag.org/next. We'll lead you in a path of salvation. Oh, you're a sinner. I'm a sinner. I've been saved by God's grace. If you haven't been saved yet, today can be your day, and you simply surrender to God. Surrender to Jesus and say, I want you to be my Lord and my Savior, Jesus. Forgive me. I'm a sinner.